The following broadcast of Talk Shop was recorded for broadcast at this time. Good morning. Today is Tuesday, September the 26th. Huh. Would have been Mom and Dad's anniversary. I guess it still is, right?
Yeah, it still is. Still is, yeah. That's amazing that you know their anniversary. I'm impressed.
Yeah, I never got anything out of it.
See, for me, my wife and I got married on my dad's birthday, so that way it was more likely that I wouldn't forget either one.
And this was his birthday gift, was to get you out of the house?
That was my birthday gift to him.
Yeah, okay. Fair enough. You ready for our little book of answers, buddy?
And he also really liked that I traded up, so that was good for him.
Yeah, well, that was...
Actually, not traded up, married up. I didn't trade. Yeah. Oh, be careful here.
Once you're into the swamp up to your hips, it doesn't matter how deep, much deeper you go.
This is true.
You are a non-moving target. All right. Why is a college student in her second year referred to as a sophomore?
Because they're no longer a fresh man. You know what? I should know this.
And I didn't. This was the next one in sequence. I did not set you up on this one. It just was there. Any clue?
Yeah, well, it's not spelled soft, like as in squishy. So I don't know.
All right. After her first or freshman year, a college student is called a sophomore and has been since the description emerged at Cambridge in 1688. The word is constructed from the Greek sophos, meaning wise, and moros, meaning foolish. So a second-year student is somewhat between ignorance and wisdom. Similarly, when we say something is sophomoric, we mean that it's pretentious or foolish.
Okay, so that wasn't a compliment last time I was called sophomore.
Depends on how old you were.
Yes.
Last week, maybe not so much so. So you in a short timer mode yet?
I am absolutely not in short timer mode. We have all kinds of things going on inside the district. And frankly, you know, my end date is a little bit soft, meaning it depends on when they find a suitable
That would be a reference
replacement.
Back to your definition of sophomore.
But
yeah.
I was just going to
say, wise
I
left, a little foolish.
I left off the moric. I left the soft. Although I said soft with a T, not the PH. So, yes.
So until they find somebody that they feel comfortable with.
That's correct. So they're very deep into the recruitment stages right now, and the firm that they're using to help them with that recruitment has come in, conducted in-person interviews, opened up interviews virtually as well. They spent a full day doing both of those, and then Friday of last week, the community survey just closed down too. And I have not heard how many people responded to that, but really looking around the characteristics they're looking for in my successor.
You have any suggestions that were taken seriously?
I did not fill in the survey. That's not mine to fill in.
Okay.
So.
Well, but you're going to be a parent.
Apparently, yes, I will be.
With a kid going to...
I will. I have a freshman at Eureka High School, yes.
So that would at least... You could argue that that would be something you would have some interest in.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So...
Probably start showing up to board meetings and commenting on curriculum and things of that nature?
Probably not. So you asked if I had short timers. I'll tell you, the one thing, board meetings, you know. You never know what's going to happen in a board meeting sometimes. So I do see the light at the end of board meetings.
So I know typically there's a lot of turnover. No, let me say it differently. Historically, there's been a lot of turnover in superintendents in a lot of districts throughout the area. We haven't seen it too much lately. We haven't seen it at some of the county positions, there's been some also. One side says healthy, new blood, new ideas, new excitement, new passion. And the other says consistency, dependability, knowledge. Things of that nature.
And then there's me.
Somewhere else.
Yes.
So you kind of look at it, and, you know, if you were, you're now an advisor, and you were brought in to be the headhunter, what kind of innate skill sets would you be looking for in somebody, not for that district, but for somebody in general?
Well, you could take that from several different views. I'll start at a 30,000 foot view, and then maybe we can come down to more.
That's your best side also.
Yes, I know.
30,000.
Yes, okay. Exactly. You know, it's kind of like the 55 mile an hour car. It looks great when you're driving by at 55 miles an hour, but yes, I understand.
Oh, so. I thought you were going to say you look good at somebody driving by at 55.
No, that requires 100. So. Yeah, so at the 30,000 foot view, I'll give some credit to this person who came up with this because I think it's really good, and that's Patrick Lencioni. He's an author, and he wrote a book called The Ideal Team Player, and I think it fits really well with the superintendency. And he has three things that go along with that, and it's hungry, humble, and smart. And let me talk about each one of those from the 30,000-foot view as far as the superintendent goes. And first one is hungry. And hungry is all about wanting to be there and really wanting to do a good job, and this intrinsic motivation to really do well, do the work that it requires, put in the time and effort that it requires, because it just is it's a huge job.
The passion, the commitment.
Yep. And that's the hungry piece. Then there's the humble piece, and the humble piece is all around, you know, giving credit to your team, not being arrogant, in really understanding why we're serving, and that's for the students, and everything that we do is for the benefit of the students, and really keeping that first and foremost in front in mind in all the decisions that happen. And then
I think Dalby uses the phrase pretty regularly, servant leader.
Absolutely.
So it's almost like the triangle is inverted.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And as a leader, you're serving your staff and your customers.
Right,
whatever kind of scenario that is.
As opposed to what's called a reward-centered leader. I don't know if you've done any reading about that. And the difference between servant leaders, exactly what John Dalby talked about, versus reward-centered leader is all about the cred that they get when they do something. It's all about them, for sure.
Yeah, that's probably more in the political arena. Typically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. And then the last one is SMART, and SMART isn't intelligent.
It's not an acronym, is it?
No, it's not an acronym either.
Or anything else? Okay, you're not going to set me up.
Yeah, so, actually, SMART is an acronym for goals, you know, specific, measurable, achievable. Anyways, I'll stop there. But back to SMART, it's about knowing when to open your mouth and knowing when not to open your mouth, being savvy, savvy about you know, what your role is as a superintendent. And so at the 30,000-foot level, those are the really key pieces that need to come along. And so then as you really drill down and really think about Eureka City Schools, from my perspective, there's the ground-level view.
We'll talk about that when we come back. It's 8:19.
Murphy's Markets has everything you need to get through your day the healthy way. From drinks to snacks and everything in between, right now, Amy and Brian coconut water is only $1.99. Brew Dr. Kombucha drinks are also just $1.99. And Annie's homegrown products are $2.49. A 6-ounce Yoplait yogurt is only 79 cents. And don't forget about Chicken of the Sea tuna, 4 for $5. Get a boost for your day by stopping by Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
The following broadcast of Talk Shop was recorded for broadcast at this time. Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:24. We're back Talking Shop this morning with Fred Van Fleck. He's still Eureka City School Superintendent, even though if you see him on the street, he looks a little bit more like Ag Teacher Fred.
Well, you know, rainy day, big storm yesterday, just, you know, dressed for the weather. You know how it is.
Boots.
Yep.
Pitchfork. Yeah. Before the break, Fred, we were talking a little bit about the profile of who might be, in general broad sense terms, best suited to be in a position of leadership, the leader, the apex of the triangle, so to mm-hmm. speak. Mm-hmm. Many of us prefer to think of it, it's the guy or gal with the target on their back that takes the arrow because they're out in front.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, protecting the troops, all that kind of stuff. You had mentioned it. That was kind of broad overview, but then at the more granular level, let's see, I like the sand rather than the dirt, so I'm going to say granular instead of ground level.
Mm-hmm.
The specificity of some of those elements, I would think, are challenging. You get somebody who's been in a position, well, okay, not everybody's going to love them all the time.
That is accurate.
Okay.
That is accurate.
Because there are decisions that have to be made that are going to be either uncomfortable or not as positive for everybody. You know, and if you spend enough time, you're going to find the people that aren't pleased with that.
And a great descriptor to go along with that I talked about earlier, always keeping in mind at the center of your decision-making what is best for students. And I like to say what is best for students isn't always best for employees. And there's a difference there sometimes. And what is best for students isn't always best for the community as a whole. And so whenever students are at the center of your decision-making process, there is always the opportunity to upset some people.
There'll be some friction somewhere.
That is correct.
Yeah. But on the other hand, you don't want the canary in the mine shaft to die and then be barbecued. So, you know.
Not a lot of meat there, no.
If it's all about the kids, well, okay, you can't really operate 100% in that vacuum because there still are realities called financing.
Still about the kids.
Contracts.
We've got to be fiscally stable.
But now if the kids decide that they want to do mink-lined carpet, whatever, something that's truly impractical, well, okay, you could argue, well, it's for the kids. Well,
There still needs to be a reality set. Not for the kids, because my argument still holds true in that vein as well. And the idea of what is going to be best for the students, fiscal solvency of the district is best for the students moving into the future. And so if we're asked—
So not tacit agreement.
Exactly. And so if we're asked to do something that we simply can't sustain as a school district with our $50 million a year budget— then we can't do it because it won't be in the best interest of students moving forward. So if you think about that, if we would have done something incredibly fiscally foolish 10 years ago, the students of today would be suffering from that. And so not only do we have to keep in mind the students who we serve right now today, we have to think about the students who will be coming through our doors 10 years from now.
I suppose that is part of the biggest challenge for someone who is in that senior level of management. Yeah, it's tough enough to know what tomorrow is or next week, particularly when you're in the legislative arena like you guys are, let alone project out 10 years and go, okay, what's going to be the consumer trends? What about the employment trends? Let's look at the political environment of that situation. And let's also kind of lob this thing in called budget and mandates from the state that may or may not be funded. All right. Yeah, I've seen you around. I don't see that you're carrying a crystal ball that's that size to be able to figure all of those things out. So as this person then starts looking into the future, big asterisks all over the place?
Well, I'll tell you where the big asterisks are going to be. And I talked a little bit about this last time I was in, and that's around artificial intelligence and the impact that's going to be there on our workforce. And so not only on
us in the educational
schools, not only on us in schools, but in our communities and in our country. And I talked about the three phases of artificial intelligence. What scares me with that is this idea of computers control everything, our power grid, our nuclear weapons. You name it, technology controls it. And so what is the impact going to be on us 10 years from now? And it's our job in education to be thinking about that. And you said, you're right, I don't have a crystal ball, but we need to be thinking about that and really considering how we're going to prepare our next generation for what we don't even know about. And historically, what's been challenging for schools is we're still educating students like we're at the turn of the 19th century.
The agrarian model is still embraced.
Yes, absolutely, 100%. And so we are going through data change so quickly right now, and with our society changing so abruptly with technology, we need to get ahead and get out there and really be thinking about that. And we've done, as a educational sector, some thought processes around what jobs are sustainable, what jobs will be around after technology and artificial intelligence, and which jobs are just not going to be there. And the big question is right now, are classrooms as we know it going to be in place 10 years from now? I would speculate for the most part, yes. However, I think the impact is going to be dramatic on schools.
Classroom size being different, or just how the entire model is executed?
I think how the entire model is executed. Right now, we have about 85% of our budget goes to people because we're in the people business. People deliver education and educate students. It's just how we work. I suspect that that's going to change. And I suspect that less of our budget will be going to people in the future, and more of our budget will be aimed towards technology.
Trying to stay abreast of or catch up to?
Both? I think implementing it into our classrooms, meaning artificial intelligence takes a bigger role inside the classroom and inside the educational component of students.
But can they take you to the senior prom? KINS, News and Information.
Something big.
Okay, it's a nice ride.
It's going to happen.
Stand by playback.
And now.
Live. Real Red Meat Radio.
I keep forgetting I'm president.
This is the Lars Larson Show.
And these kids who come, they become Americans before a lot of Americans become Americans.
Now, here's your host, Lars Larson.
Hey there, it's Lars Larson. Join me for the Lars Larson Show, weeknights 10 to midnight. Honestly provocative talk radio on KINS.
The following broadcast of Talk Shop was recorded for broadcast at this time. Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:35. We're back talking shop this morning with Fred Van Fleck. So, Fred, as you're describing the challenges that await whoever the next person is that's coming in, kind of sounds like they need to be a futurist also, and maybe somewhat knowledgeable about consumer trends, consumer electronics, social activities, pressures, things of that nature, all wrapped into this bundle called technology of tomorrow. Fair?
I think that's a very fair assessment, because guess what? The students we're educating right now are going to be running our country and our world 15 years from now. And so we need to be thinking about what skills do they need to be equipped with in order to better serve us as a society and us as a country and us as a world as we transition into this unknown.
Now, you sound like you're running for a state office.
No, thank you.
just because the landscape is so large.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, when you focus on Eureka, well, Eureka is going to be slightly different than all the other ones in the county, probably significantly more so than some of the other outlying areas. When you get into the metropolitans, completely different. So when you talk about skill sets and employment and things for jobs and life, you know, here we're outside, we're mowing lawns. Down there, they have pictures and they hang them up on the windows. Yeah, it's a different cultural. And I've had I forget who came up with this one. I may have done it even. I think that there's a caste system going on now, but I don't think it's economic. I think it's metropolitan versus suburban. Those that think that milk comes from a carton and those that recognize what a cow is. Mm-hmm. And the differences there. You could say blue collar, white collar, but that really doesn't come into play too much. So some of the pressures that the smaller rural school districts will need to be able to handle, I would think, are going to be significantly different than what's going on in the metropolitans as far as the day-to-day. You know, the employment down the road, yeah, okay, it's all the same. The technology, it's all the same. But the application of that information, I think that's where the difference is.
Well, I'd like to really take that in two directions, and I'm going to start with the little short direction first, and then I'm going to go down the one that I want to spend a little bit more time with. And the first direction that I'm not going to give too much time to is just we're in a shrinking world. Technology is shrinking our world, and what is facing our inner city schools and what is facing our suburban and rural schools are going to be more similar than it's ever been in the past. There's always going to be unique challenges such as transportation and getting students to school from Showers Pass or wherever it is, you know, that they live way out there and we've got to get them here. But I think technology is going to have an impact on that as well, as far as how often do they come in. And then again, just this idea of people working remotely is shrinking our world. There's a lot of
that would level the playing field significantly. Mm-hmm. But that, do you think that could happen in 10 years?
Well, look what happened with COVID in a matter of a year and a half and how much more prevalent. I remember when COVID started, I could barely sign on to a virtual meeting. I think I'd been to one, maybe two virtual meetings ever before COVID. And when I went to a virtual meeting, I had to plan a half an hour ahead of time just to make sure that I could get the right buttons clicked and I wasn't sure. Now I could be running into my office and click into a virtual meeting in a matter of seconds. I mean, it's not clumsy anymore. It's just of second
nature. I'm thinking of labor contracts that would permit or would not permit
I think
maybe over 10 years
Think our labor contracts are going to have to change with artificial intelligence. But here's the piece that I believe needs to change, and this is the other fork in the road that I wanted to spend a little time on. And this is the idea of we have 17,000 students in Humboldt County. Put that in perspective, when I was in a school district down in the Central Valley, when I was an assistant superintendent of business services, there was 13,000 students in the single school district. That was considered a mid-sized school district for California.
Quick checkoff. You say 17,000 students, is that 17,000 school-aged individuals, or is that the 17,000 that are registered and not including that one-third that are not?
I think one-third would be a high number of students who are
30% is what I've heard.
Those are students who are enrolled in public, private, and charter schools. 17,000 is the number here in Humboldt County.
So you could safely bump it to 25 for us.
I don't know enough information to be able to agree with that or not or disagree with that.
Well, I'm using your former employee, Michael, referencing these figures.
Could be.
Of course, he's not going to be your former anything, and he's pretty soon you're going to be his former.
Yeah, well,
but regardless, there's a critical mass there, whether it's in Eureka or Arcata, wherever it may happen to be.
For where I'm going, it doesn't really matter. Call it 20,000, call it 17,000, call it 25,000. Doesn't really matter. So where I'm going with this is Eureka City Schools is by far, by more than double, the largest school district in Humboldt County. We have 3,700 students in the district, a touch less. We're a small school district. We still qualify to be part of the Small School Districts Association. But then you start going down the road and you have the Maple Creeks, who I think this year have three or four students in Maple Creek, 31 school districts in Humboldt County. And thinking about the future, we just can't sustain that into the future. Many of those school districts, and I've gotten roasted for this, and it's easy for me to say now on my way out because people roast me away. I don't care. The reality is our school districts need to have, let me give you a fancy term, it's called lapsation, need to have some of them lapsing into, that's a legal term for a district, combining with another district to make sure that we have the economy of scale moving forward. 31 school districts, 31 superintendents, 31 different transportation departments, 31 different budgets, 31 different LCAPs, 31, and I can go on and on and on and on, is such a redundancy of the efforts that we're doing.
31 school boards.
Yeah.
Or maybe not complete school boards.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. You can see the historical reasons why.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
The practical current.
Yep.
It kind of loses a little bit of its gusto.
Mm-hmm. The reason that they sustain into today is because people don't want to give up the local control, which I get. And so let's set up a system where there's still the local voice in some of these school districts who are small and in our rural communities, so they don't lose their feel of being out there, but yet they can benefit from the economy of scale of being part of other school districts. And again, the largest school district in our county, this is worth repeating, Eureka City Schools is a small school district. And so it's not like it's going to turn into this inner city, LA unified, even, and I'm not advocating for this, even if all 17,000 students were in one school, it's still considered a mid-sized district for California. That wouldn't work geographically in our county. But as we move forward, we have to figure something out. Have to.
KINS, News and Information Time, it's 844.
Hearty and healthy foods are abundant at Murphy's Markets. USDA Choice Boneless Beef Chuck Roast is now $5.99 a pound. USDA Choice New York Strip Steak, $15.99 a pound. And USDA Grade A Boneless Skinless Chicken Thighs are only $3.99 a pound. Complement this with a Greek salad, now just $7.99 a pound, topped with Kraft salad dressing for only $3.75 for a 16-ounce bottle. Murphy's Markets, more than a grocer, your neighbor since 1971.
Good morning, KINS, News and Information Time. It's 8:48. We're back talking shop this morning with Fred Van Fleck. So, Fred, as you're looking at these challenges that are coming in from the outside, there's got to be some internals also that are starting to bubble up. You know, we hear about so many of the cultural things and so much of the social and some of the pressures that the kids are under and some of the I almost use a hyphenated phrase here. I'll just say goofy and I'll leave the second half. Decisions that are being made in the court level. And you just kind of scratch your head and go, wait a minute, what's happening to our culture? You know, if we're talking about the kids, well, if there's no culture in the future, you know, who cares what you're doing? Can those be balanced or should they not be balanced?
Wow, that is a big conversation going on in school districts right now, because we have school districts across the state of California who are very left, progressive, liberally oriented as far as the school boards go, and we have school districts who are very right, ultra-conservative as far as school boards go, and the clash of that in the state of California is happening. And I think it's pretty, I'll be Captain Obvious here, where the clash is, and it's on the right-wing school boards who have a very conservative view and don't tend to side with our now governor on his views and the policy that's happening out in school districts, mainly around gender identity. And the big battle out there right now is, do students have a right to gender identify without the school district notifying the parents? The California law right now says that if a student identifies with a gender other than their gender they were born with, that it's
the
their
other
business.
One.
That's
yeah.
correct. It's their business, and we cannot share that with the parents. And so,
even being a minor,
that is accurate, 100% accurate. Same thing for a minor who gets pregnant. Can't share that with the parents. The minor has a right to keep that information to themselves. Now, I'm not being judgmental on this. I'm not entering my opinion on this. But what I will say is that there are some very heavy opinions out there on the more liberal-leaning side, that they are protected. They should not be their parents should not be informed. This is a student's right to choose what their identity is, all those things, as compared to the conservative side, who says, we're the parents. We have a right to know. We're trying to parent our children, make them a better, more productive person in society. And so we have a right to know so we can help them through this situation and parent them through this situation. Some school boards.
Is there an option to say no? Just no to every, you know, we're not going to share. We're not going to talk. We're not going to do this. We're not going to do that. No. That's not our role.
That's basically what has been playing out, because the state has put this rule out there and some boards have come out and said, no, if we have students identify with the opposite gender, we have a right to tell we have an obligation to tell the parents, and we are going to tell the parents. And so they're passing resolutions that they're not going to follow this state law. And so what's happening and what's playing out in the politics of this is that the state is stepping in and saying, you can't do this. And
so it's like HIPAA laws almost?
Similar. I mean, different, same idea, a little bit different concept. And it's going to be really interesting to see how this plays out in the end. And I'll give you a for instance. Down in Southern California, our state superintendent of schools, Stoney Thurman, was in a district giving public comment based on you need to follow the state of California rules, and the board kicked him out. and
had him escorted out of the room?
Had him escorted out by security because they said that he was not abiding by the rules of the board and what their public comment rules were. And so a security personnel who was employed by the district escorted under the board president's order, the state superintendent of instruction out. And so that sets up a really interesting piece where what's going to happen when the state superintendent of schools, who has control of certain things that not local control, but funding control, audit control, all those pieces, how is all this going to play out as we move
forward?
How many
times you want to be audited? Or when a different individual is put in there, and let's say it's more conservative in the decisions, or the decisions are more liberal, all of a sudden you're starting to get whipsawed around.
Absolutely, absolutely. Because
so flexibility needs to be in this person too, and maybe even backbone.
It's got to be there. Got to be there because it will not be easy. We are going into some interesting times in education, and have been.
Yeah, that's it's all a continuum, isn't it?
Indeed.
All right. See you next month.
All right.
All right, bud. Hang in there. See everybody tomorrow. This presentation of Talk Shop was recorded at a previous time for playback today.